Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for the day, Greta Anderson. Later in the show, we will be joined by Susan Guiazda of the City of Ames. Yesterday was a difficult day for dozens of activists in Central Iowa calling themselves water protectors. 50 or so water protectors gathered at the E18 bridge crossing the Des Moines River in Boone County near the town of Pilot Mound. This is where the Dakota Access Pipeline will cross the steeply banked river, and yesterday was the day that the green pipe finally began to be pulled through the borehole it had taken the company several failed tries to make. The Des Moines River crossing is essentially the last piece of the pipeline left in Iowa. For the last few weeks, the inability of the company to complete the borehole has given water protectors hope that the river itself, known for the depth of its gorge and the beauty of its valley, was joining in their struggle. Yesterday, a couple dozen young water protectors continued to stay by the river in vigil through the night as Dakota Access crews continued their work. Many of them had been arrested at least once in nonviolent direct actions. We'll be speaking to one of them, Jessica Fears, in a few minutes. With the Iowa leg of the pipeline now nearing completion, the only segment of the pipeline left is that which is planned to pass under Lake Oahe near Cannonball, North Dakota. Lake Oahe, essentially an enlargement of the Missouri River created by the Oahe Dam in Pierre, South Dakota, is a story in itself. Constructed in 1948 and displacing thousands of Lakota from the fertile agricultural lands at the river's edge. Eminent domain, the same concept that has allowed Dakota Access to seize farmland in Iowa, was used in 1948 to seize the land of the Standing Rock and Cheyenne River tribes when the Oahe Dam was built. According to the 1851-1868 treaties, the land on which the pipeline is being built belongs to the Lakota. This is why the actions of the pipeline company, Dakota Access, in planning and digging the pipeline without consulting the Standing Rock Tribe, are considered by many, including environmental lawyer Robert F. Kennedy Jr., to be illegal. The Missouri is the primary water source for the Standing Rock Tribe. As such, they feel they should have a say regarding its potential or even likely pollution. Just as, for instance, the state of Iowa required a $25 million general liability bond in that case. Perhaps most potently, this struggle fulfills a prophecy in the people's oral tradition, warning of a black snake that will emerge to threaten the Sioux Nation. Last weekend, I traveled to Cannonball, North Dakota, to witness the struggle of the Lakota and their allies against the pipeline. I went to Ochedi Sakawi Camp, a camp that is described as a peace or prayer camp. Here is a Lakota elder from both the Standing Rock and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes, Emmanuel Red Bear, describing to me what the struggle against the pipeline means to him.
My Lakota name is Tatanka Yotaka, which means Sitting Bull. I come from Sitting Bull's people on the Standing Rock Reservation. But I live on the Cheyenne River Indian Reservation.
And you were instrumental in helping start the camp known as Sacred Stone Camp, the first camp to stand in the way of the pipeline.
Well, because I'm part of the Sitting Bull's people, anything to do with Standing Rock, and I'm like the head man for my family for anything to do with Crazy Horse or Sitting Bull, because those are two chiefs that I come from. And they had a meeting in Standing Rock at Fort Yates on March 29th, 30th, April 1st. They call it the Prophecy of the Grandfathers. There was a prophecy that one day there'll be a black snake coming, and that black snake was going to destroy our drinking water. And now the prophecy has come true. This pipeline is coming through this area. So we're here at this camp. And April 1st, that meeting at the Standing Rock, all these elders met, and they talked about this camp at the Sacred Stone Camp. And there was 12 individuals that made a commitment that weekend to start the camp at the Sacred Stone. So on that day, April 1st, we all went to the Sacred Stone and set up the first tent and first kitchen. From there, those 12 individuals will stay there, and people were going to support those 12 people. And I work as a teacher, so I come back on weekends or go to pray there and support. Because of the Sacred Stone Camp, it got too full. So the people moved across on the north side of the river where we're at now. And that camp is called Ocheti Shekoi Camp, the seven council fires. The Lakota people have seven council fires. The state of North Dakota, the governor, the congressmen and the House of Representatives and the Corps of Engineers and the mayor of Bismarck and Mandan and the sheriff, nobody's listening to the Lakota people. The original route for this pipeline was north of Bismarck, but the city of Bismarck didn't want the pipeline to go through north of Bismarck, so they rerouted to come through Standing Rock. I don't know why they didn't listen to our people when they listened to Bismarck people. So they rerouted this pipeline and thinking that they could just come through here, and the Lakota people would never say nothing about the pipeline. But there's a lot at stake here, not just this Standing Rock, but there are 14 million people that depend on this water. There's 14 million people from every walk of life down, all the way down to the Mississippi. Not just people, but everything, the fish, the environment, the ecosystem depends on, you know, we depend on this water. And underneath this water is, they call it the Oglala Aquifer. So when that pipeline breaks, it'll pollute our water. And some people don't understand why. And so we're standing together to not let the pipeline go across the river.
You mentioned the prophecy of the black snake. Is this something you heard growing up? Did you know about this prophecy just growing up in your culture?
Yes, my grandmother was a very active woman, and my grandmother was the one that told about this black snake going across. Coming down, this prophecy was already told when I was a kid that these prophecies were going to happen. And just like this other prophecy of the seven generations, we're now in the seventh generation. And that prophecy talks about our ancestors 140 years ago thought about us today, what they were going to leave us. Well, this prophecy of the black snake was coming from Grandmother Earth, which is Canada. And it's coming down into our country. Now it's here. The black snake is the oil.
What did your grandmother tell you about the black snake?
She told us that one day that the Lakota people will have to stand up for the rights of our nation. For too long, the American United States government would just do whatever they want to the Native people. And the natives didn't fight back, or they didn't stand up for what they believed in. We've been brainwashed, told that our Lakota ways were no good, our spirituality was no good. Now the people are standing up for what we believe. And it's probably too late for some of the things, but it's not too late for this water to stand up for it.
And can you say a little bit more about the seventh generation? What does it mean that you're now in the seventh generation?
One generation equaled 20 years. our ancestors like Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse and Red Cloud, all these chiefs fought for what we have today. They thought about 7 generations ahead, 140 years, they thought about our existence. What are we going to leave our people for 7 generations from now? Our ancestors thought that. So they fought for this land. They fought for a way of life. So this is what we can leave them. When we leave this earth, this is what's going to be 7 generations now. This is what's going to be left. Today, we lost land. We lost our identity. We're losing our culture. We're losing our language. This is what our ancestors fought for. They fought the government so that we won't lose these things. But yet it's happening today. If we have to fight for 7 generations to come now, what are our 7 generations from now is going to have? They probably have nothing.
So when you speak of this generation that was 7 generations back 140 years ago, that was Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse, your very relatives who were fighting for this land that you now live on, this land and water that you're now defending. So now in your mind, you're thinking about 140 years from now, what are you fighting for to give to them?
Yeah, well, because I come from the lineage of those chiefs, and because of what my grandparents instilled in me, was that you got to fight for what we have left. Well, you got to fight for what you believe in. You know, you got to stand up for your rights. And the 7 generations, they fought for what we have. They shed blood. We lost millions of acres of land. This was the one time, this was the Great Sioux Nation, before the states became states like North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Wyoming, Montana. That was the Great Sioux Nation where the Lakota people ruled that area, and other tribes lived amongst us, but the Great Sioux Nation mainly consists of Lakota people. And today we're put on reservations. Those reservation, even the reservation lands are being lost to non-Indians who are buying up the land from the Lakota people. So we just have whatever left, whatever land we have left. We're slowly losing who we are as a Lakota nation. And that's what I'm standing up for, you know. I want to stand up for my children and my grandchildren, their children to come. But it seems like we're losing this battle because the government just taking advantage of us.
Do you feel that you've made some gains already? I mean, you started with 1 tent and 1 kitchen across the river there. And now, yesterday on Thanksgiving, there were at least 5,000 people here. There's teepees everywhere and people of all nations, indigenous people of all nations coming here. Did you ever think that you would be living among a village of teepees again?
It brings back a sense of pride. It brings back a sense of joy to know that this is how our ancestors lived one time. It's not only natives, but people from all walks of life are here today and in prayer. That makes me feel great inside, that knowing that, you know, America, we still care about one another, even though we have barriers sometimes. And it makes us feel good to know that there's people from all over the world that are standing in solidarity with Standing Rock, to know that people actually care about what's happening to our environment. You know, for too long that things are going too far, like we're buying bottled water today, you know, when we have our own water. And it shouldn't have to be like that, but that's just the way the system is working now. So it makes me happy, yet it's sad too, that we have to fight for these things that we have.
Can I ask you what subject you teach?
Well, I teach in a high school, and I teach college level classes. I teach the Lakota language, culture, and history. But my greatest teachers who taught me are my Lakota people, my ancestors, my grandparents. Of course, in the modern day society, you have to have a college degree to be a teacher. So I studied theology and religion, and I'm also I studied Lakota studies to be a teacher. So I'm state certified to teach what I do.
Great, and that's at Eagle Butte High School.
Yes, Shining Butte High School, and the college is called Oglala Lakota College. We have a center right there on Cheyenne River that I teach Lakota study program.
Thank you very much, Manny Red Bear. What's that friend name? I need to be your friend now.
Hola, Manny.
Hola, Manny.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. That was Emmanuel Red Bear from the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, also Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. My name is Greta Anderson. You're listening to Local Talk. I met Manny at the Ocheti Sakawi Camp near Cannonball, North Dakota, where Native Americans are joining the Lakota to fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Manny took me back to the kitchen where he eats, Winona's Soup Kettle House. So I got a chance to talk to Winona as well. I'm here with Winona of Winona's Kitchen, or of the Soup Kettle Kitchen. Is that how you say it?
It's called Wahampi Chaga Oti Soup Kettle House.
So you usually make soup every day?
Yes, I do. I make soup on a daily basis. It's more of a soup hut. I have soup wojapi and fry bread every day. And have it for the people, feed the people buffalo.
So the main ingredient of the soup is always buffalo?
Yes, it is.
And I see your big kettle over there. It's a very traditional kettle you cook over a fire.
It's my 50-gallon soup pot, and usually make that once a day and sometimes twice a day. Depends on the people. Like today, we're going to make it to right now. We're going to start our soup and then probably later on start some more soup.
And who eats your soup?
Everybody does. My kitchen is one of the most favorite spots for the Ocheti Sakawi, so everybody comes here to eat. Today, we have some natives that came from, I think they're Ojibwe. Anyway, they're here to share their native foods that they didn't get to share yesterday because they were on the road. So they're bringing their traditional foods here, and they're going to cook it and share it with the people.
Is that like wild rice and some berries?
Succotash, and it has to do with like pork belly fat and hominy, and some really, it really sounds good, so I'm anxious to try it.
Does that mean you have the day off?
Well, actually, I do have the day off today. I'm doing some business, and Karen, my friend, she's going to run the kitchen today. But I have down everything that they need to do. They pretty much work with me every day, so they know what I just have to write down things and let them know.
How long have you been living here?
I came here the first day at camp in August. And I was only supposed to be here for a week, and I ended up staying. Felt the need, you know, to help feed the people. And it's been really enriching, you know, to see all the tribes come and share their foods with us, you know. And I learned, I was the head cook for Ocheti Sakawi. And I learned to make all the traditional foods that the Native Americans brought to our camp. And after a while, the need grew to be more needed to feed our people with meat. So we opened a soup kitchen to help accommodate our people.
You can use all parts of the animal when you make soup out of it.
Yes, I do. We don't waste nothing. We use everything. We don't waste nothing.
As we talked, Winona told me that she was from Greengrass, a tiny town from Cheyenne River Reservation that I have actually visited almost half a dozen times on account of some family there. So I had to gossip a bit with her. We then got back to talking about her supervision of the camp kitchens.
It wasn't, you know, hard to do because, it's, you know, you just get teamwork and supervise and make sure everything goes smooth and all your prepping, your meat and your vegetables and your dishes and your soups, your wojapis, you know, all these things need people there to constantly watch over them so they don't burn. You keep your heat on low. I mean, there's ways that you have to learn to cook with love and, you know, you have to have patience when you cook food. It can't be just throw it in there and done right away. Nothing gets done, you know. And sometimes our food, we dry our food, so we have to soak it overnight or, you know, we have to do things, prepare it the day before. Like our dried meat soup or our wild timsula, we have to soak that the night before. Then it cooks all day on a pot with the dried meat and the dried corn. And, you know, that kind of soup is, you know, what we eat in the wintertime. And we dry everything in the get ready in the fall, so we have that soup all winter, because we never had refrigeration, so we had to dry our meat, make sure it was, you know, dried. So they asked me to run the new kitchen again. You know, I told them I could do it because I could supervise that kitchen, but still keep my kitchen open. So you know, that's the next step in the next few days for me.
When you cook back at Greengrass, where you have a trailer or a home?
Yeah. I have a little FEMA trailer. It's like a one-bedroom FEMA trailer. I live in back home. And when I cook back home, I cook outside. It's mostly for a ceremony like Ishnati or Sundances, you know, that kind of thing. It's just a four-day. But this year, you know, I've been cooking like this since August. Winter's coming, but, you know, we're going to make do with what we can here for our people. It ain't hard to do. It's just a way of life. It's an everyday living that you set your mind to it. You're going to do it. And, you know, that's what I'm doing, so.
So you've really changed your whole way of cooking back to the traditional way.
Yes, I have. And I think it's the best way, too, because our people are more healthier. And they, you know, it's you know, it tastes really good, so they like it.
Yeah, and the lack of alcohol contributes to the health of the camp, probably.
Well, I think it's good too because a lot of our people on the streets were on the streets, and now I see them up here helping all over, and it's just awesome. I praise them too when I see them. You know, I'm glad you're here. You know, hang around, don't go home. You know, encourage them to stay up here because I'd rather see them up here than, you know, back home on the street. So it's nice. It is. It's a change for our people. It's healing for our people. A piapi, you know. We gotta, you know, heal together. And that's the way this is, that's what this is for, you know. So I enjoy my kitchen. Brings a lot of love and a lot of good people to my kitchen.
That was Winona Gaston, proprietress of Winona's Soup Kettle House, a free kitchen at Ocheri Sakawin Camp. Everything is free at camp. It is a moneyless society made possible by a stream of gifts from other tribes. For instance, a Minnesota tribe had donated dozens of large oak timbers that were being cut and chopped day and night. White allies have also given generously, both cash donations and large piles of clothing, blankets, and even brand new sleeping bags that were constantly being sorted by volunteers. Well, while I was getting a sense of the camp and connecting with Cheyenne River folks, my in-studio guest, Jessica Fears, was out on some of the direct actions that were being conducted all throughout Thanksgiving weekend. These did not have nearly as drastic outcomes as the actions the week before, in which water protectors were assaulted with rubber bullets, pepper spray, concussion grenades, and freezing cold water. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, Greta. Thank you.
And by the way, before we get underway, I want to tell listeners that yesterday at 7 a.m., KHOI ran an excellent one-hour documentary produced by the Butte, Montana community radio station, covering, in part, that water spraying incident. You can access it through our archives, and looking for the 7 a.m. Thursday slot, we will also post a link to it when we post this show on our website. So, Jessica Fears, the main action you participated in on was Thanksgiving in Mandan, a town of 20,000 in Morton County, just adjacent to Bismarck, which the census lists as being 90% white. Tell us about your time there, Jessica.
We'd heard that morning that there was going to be some sort of action, and it was very hush-hush. We all got into a big caravan, and they drove out to an intersection. It was Memorial and Main Street, I think, or something like that. It was a very centrally located avenue. And a group of people got out and set up tables, folding tables, like you would have for Thanksgiving dinner. And they put out a feast, so to speak. And they occupied that intersection for a period of time.
The slogan was, no thanks, no giving, no pipelines, no pilgrims, no pipelines,
yeah.
No prisons.
And it was Genocidal Appreciation Day was another banner that they had. Pretty quickly, the police showed up in a large force. A couple of them already had large red pepper spray canisters in their hands. Just right off the bat, they came at us from every intersection. And then after a while, a bunch of people parked their cars. One guy had started all by himself, yelling, a local, telling everybody, you know, go home to your families, let these people go home. And a lot of people there said, well, this is my home, and I would love to go home. We just got to stop this first so I can have a family and go home.
Right.
But then eventually some more locals or people who were coming, you know, traveling to and from stopped and started like kind of a counter protest. And it was very aggressive. It was very, very aggressive. At that point, the police pulled back quite a ways and they formed a wall across all lanes of traffic with their vehicles. And then they stood there themselves. There was one road they pulled back completely. We couldn't see the cars, but they were around the corner, and they were up on a railroad bridge above us. But they didn't come back forward. It turns out they were out there calling tow trucks in to illegally tow our vehicles.
Okay. I want to just jump back to something before we get to the towing of vehicles. You said that it was an aggressive scene. Are you speaking of verbally aggressive?
Yeah, and physically. There were a lot of locals who were kind of shoving people around with their chests and grabbing things from people, you know. I was kind of shocked, I guess, because here in Iowa, we've gotten so much support from the community, and our law enforcement has been incredible about this. Bill Davis out in Calhoun County says, you know, he hates to arrest the protesters that come out to his county because he supports it.
Right. Okay. So the police were, you heard that the police were towing vehicles.
Yeah. Somebody came forward and said they're starting to tow cars. Make sure your car's parked. And so a couple of us decided just let's go back and make sure that we're okay. We'd all looked at the curb and for signs and everything. It was in front of a house, unpainted curb, no signs.
You were parked legally.
Yes, we were very sure that we were parked legally. And when we came over, there was a tow truck and an officer standing there. So we got them to stop that, but then we saw another car across the street. They were starting to tow, so we ran over there with a group of people, telling them, you know, to stop. You can't do this. You know, we're going to film this. It's illegal. And then again, some residents got out of their cars and came over and became very confrontational. And the police were incredibly rude at that point, cursing and shoving people. One guy pushed me into the street, telling me to get out of the way and move along. And then another guy came behind him and pulled me back onto the sidewalk and yelled at me for being in the street.
Okay.
Like I said, compared to what we've seen in Iowa, it was surreal.
Right. And you were camped out with a group from Sisseton Wahpeton?
Yeah, the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate, out of Sisseton, South Dakota. They're part of the Ocheti Sakoan, the Great Sioux. And they've just been so kind to us. They've come down to Iowa and supported us in our fight here. And so I personally, all of my donations, I generally send straight to them because I have a list of, you know, what they need, and I can make sure that they get it.
And they're connected to the woman, Sophia Wolanski, whose arm was mangled in that Sunday night horrible confrontation. It was mangled by a concussion grenade. I'm not even sure what that is, but...
Yeah, a concussion grenade is kind of similar to a flashbang from what I understand, but it's supposed to create a sound that rattles your head instead of a bright light. They're never intended to be shot at people, ever. You're supposed to shoot them at the ground or an object to deploy them. So she should have never been hit so high on her body, for starts.
And you're pointing to your upper arm. That's where she was hit.
Her right here in her elbow, and the crook of her arm, essentially on her forearm there. And it's a horrific injury. She's just 21 years old, I believe, and she'll probably lose her arm or a good portion of it. And the gentleman in the camp that were sitting around the fire spoke frequently of how that night still stays with them, and in particular her scream when she was hit. I don't have words for it.
Right. Well, and then moving back to Iowa, last night was yesterday was an emotional day for you and your comrades who have been fighting for months.
Yeah, we last night they put their final piece of the puzzle together, I guess. I don't know what to call it. I don't want to say nail in the coffin because, you know, we still have quite a ways to go with this. We have landowners that still have court December 15th, so it's kind of unimaginable that the project's in the ground when we still have landowners that haven't had their day in court. But they were dragging the pipe under the Des Moines River last night, which was the last piece of actual construction. Everything else is just, you know, filling over and making it look pretty again. We were out there. I was out there for about 12 hours until about 11 o'clock. And they were working continuously throughout the night. We had everyone from the Bakken Resistance Coalition show up. Bold Iowa sent some people out there. CCI sent some people. Mississippi Stan was there, of course. We got a visit from Jessica Resnick, which was wonderful.
Jessica Resnick is the woman who was on hunger strike for 10 or 12 days.
She continues her fast,
actually.
She continues
her fast.
Yeah, I believe this is day 12.
And you told me she was arrested at the Iowa Utilities Board headquarters on Court Avenue in Des Moines on Wednesday.
Yeah, she was arrested on Wednesday. She had requested a meeting several times. As far as we know, the requests were received but never, you know, contacted in regards to that meeting. So Jessica took it upon herself to go in and demand a meeting, and they continued to decline it, and eventually she was arrested for trespassing. And at that point in time, there were also people singing. I don't know if she was taking part in the singing, but she was charged with disorderly conduct as well. Okay. And Travis himself had barricaded a door in an attempt to grab the ear of anyone trying to enter, and he was also arrested for trespass.
Okay. Meanwhile, this weekend, an estimated 2,000. Jessica, will you stick around? I've got someone on the phone here. An estimated 2,000 U.S. military veterans will be converging upon Ocheri Sakowi Camp in Standing Rock. Their arrival was scheduled for December 4th to 6th, but some are going early because of the U.S. Army Corps' warning that it may take measures Monday, December 5th, to shut down the camp of several thousand people, either by issuing fines, maybe towing cars, who knows, blocking any new supplies from coming in. We've heard that. We have on the line one veteran from Des Moines who is traveling there with a Central Iowa water protector and friend of KHOI, Mark Edwards, today. This veteran's name is Bruce Espy, and he served in the Vietnam War. Bruce, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
So we don't have a whole lot of time. Can you share why you are moved to take this 12-hour trip up to North Dakota and camp out in the frigid weather, in the snow, up at Standing Rock Camp?
Well, thank you for having me on the program. I would say that I hadn't really thought about going to Standing Rock. There had been a lot of effort here with the Balkan resistance in Iowa, and kind of my practice spiritually and otherwise is that you take care of what's under your feet. So effort in Iowa has been what's under our feet, obviously. When it came up that they called for veterans to come to Standing Rock, there's an opportunity for me to stand with other veterans was a unique opportunity. I've done that before, but it's been many years in protests. And so I wanted to take advantage of that opportunity to go up there. And, you know, I see the Standing Rock demonstration important for support of the indigenous people, but also it's part of just a wider, much broader picture of what's going on environmentally and in the country. So I'm going for to support the indigenous people, but also as a part of my feeling that this is just a piece of a much greater problem that we're confronted with.
Of course, the Native Americans are known to volunteer in great proportions when it comes to the military. They are quick to respond to the call of duty. Mm. And many of them volunteered for Vietnam.
Right. I serve with Native Americans in the military. I'm kind of well aware of that.
How long do you expect to stay there?
Well, we're kind of open-ended. We'll be coming back the first of the week, probably. A lot of it is we're trying to avoid getting snowed in. I think they have a big storm coming in, so we may head out ahead of the storm. But at this point, we don't know. It's hard to know what we're driving into, so we're kind of open-ended on that. But we don't really know what to expect, and I, you know, I don't know what to expect either. I mean, I'm not really a spokesman for 2,000 veterans, so I'm going largely because of the call from the elders and the tribes up there to be a peaceful demonstration, and that's kind of paramount in me going. If I felt like that wasn't the case, I wouldn't be involved. The nonviolent aspect of it is paramount for me to be involved. So we'll see. We get what happens when we get 2,000 veterans together. It should be an amazing event.
Yes, it should. Well, thank you for joining us today. We wish you well. I'm sure that many people don't know what to expect as they approach these circumstances. And Jessica, also thank you to you for your contributions to KHOI and your efforts.
Thank you, Greta.
Thank you.
We'll play some music and come back with Susan Guiazda.
Where there is no pebble tossed, no wind cup is empty, every cup is full, maybe again. Would it be no? There is a bounty that was not made by the hands of men. There is a road, no simple highway between the dawn and the dark of night. And if you go, no one may follow. That path is for your steps alone.
Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the day, Greta Anderson, and I've been joined by Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and she has with her...
I have Don Kamm, our Director of Ames Electric Services. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Don, I've heard a lot about you.
Uh-oh.
No, we had some folks talking about solar recently, so I know that you did a presentation to the city of the city council. So
absolutely, we've done a lot of talking about solar. We have an advisory board called URAB, appointed by the mayor, and we've held several community meetings to talk about two pieces of solar. One is how do we work within the city if somebody were to put solar on their own home, and so we've talked a lot about what's called net metering.
Right.
The other topic that's real near and dear to our hearts is what we call community solar. So it's for those that maybe don't want to put it on their own home or own business. How can we bring solar to renters and people that don't live in homes and stuff like that? And we've had quite a few discussions on community solar also.
Well, it sounds to me like this has been an initiative that's brought by the public, you know, strong interest from the public, and that the City of Ames has been very responsive to the public in this regard.
Thank you. The net metering or the residential solar, the customer-owned solar, that program is already up and running, and we've seen an explosion of people installing solar. And so that's one piece of it that we're working on. The community solar from a utility standpoint, I think, is taking longer. We want to do it right. We've been looking at other models that other cities and other people have done so that hopefully in 2017 we're going to have community solar here in the City of Ames.
Great.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes, it is.
So another program that the Ames Electric Services promotes a lot at this time of the year is around the holidays, a lot of people buy appliances, and we want to ensure that they're buying Energy Star appliances and taking advantage of those rebate programs that we offer through Ames Electric Services.
Yep. You say that kind of funny, like, here, honey, I bought you a washer.
I once got a vacuum cleaner for Christmas.
There's no rebate for that one. But some people do make those large purchases around the holidays. It's a good time to buy. And, you know, sometimes a dishwasher is what you need to make somebody happy.
That's right. Yeah, so we do. One of the things, we're one of those unique industries or businesses or whatever that really wants our customers to use our product wisely, okay? So we're trying to encourage our customers, look for that, what we call an Energy Star label. So that means that appliance or air conditioner, typically it's an appliance, operates and uses energy more efficiently. We want people to use less of our product. That sounds strange, but we're in the business to use it responsibly. And if you get a washer, if you get a dryer, look for that label, because that means it's been designed to use less energy and still provide good quality washing or drying or something like that. So, you know, when you buy that, if you get that, then turn it into us. We actually offer rebates in the neighborhood of $50 to $100 in the cost of the appliance.
Wow. So it might cost a little bit more at the outset to buy an Energy Star appliance, but you turn in your receipt to City of Ames and you get that right back.
You get it back in that in in that rebate. But then because it's energy efficient, you also continue to save money in the long run every time you use it, because it's using less energy all the time. So your electric bill is less.
Sounds like a good deal to me.
It is a great deal. At this time of year, we also promote lighting rebates. Now, we don't do lighting rebates for holiday lights. Although, if you've noticed those super bright holiday lights, those tend to be LED lights. If you buy those LED lights for your home, there's a rebate for those as well.
And LED lights have dropped in price dramatically. And some of the things that you can do now with LED lights, you can replace almost any kind of light bulb in your home with an LED light. And they use quite a bit less energy. It used to be incandescence was the standard, and they came out with compact fluorescence. Those are those curlicue white light bulbs, and those were energy efficient. LEDs are even quite a bit more efficient than even the compact fluorescence. So LEDs are the way to go. They last a tremendous long time, and they're the price on them is coming down. I think even in the Black Friday ads, I was seeing them for $2, $3, $4 at some of the stores.
And then you get a rebate on top of that lower cost.
It's a 30%. So whatever that light costs you, the city gives you a 30% rebate on lights also.
And again, the purpose is just to incentivize you to make that investment in energy efficient appliances, lighting, air conditioning. And so we're going to give you that rebate for you to make that decision to commit to energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm. So this is a year-round program, but you're reminding us right now.
I do remind everybody year-round to remember to be conserve energy, but also we push those programs now because they're popular at this point time of year.
I'm going to go out and buy some lights as my Christmas present to myself.
It's a very good investment.
Light bulbs fit real well in the stocking, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
They're great.
Super. What else do you have for us, Susan?
Well, if anything more from electric services?
I would just say, again, some of the safety things at Christmas time, if you put lights on that holiday tree, on that Christmas tree, some of the older lights get hot. And we always encourage our residents that if you're putting the older style lights on there, they get hot. Keep that tree watered. We don't hear too much about Christmas tree fires anymore, but, one fire is too many. So, that safety kind of thing. The same with other ways to conserve, especially in the wintertime. The question is always get asked, do you have your shades open or closed and things like that? And typically the answer is have your shades open during the day so you get that sunlight to use that natural heating, and then close them at night so that it actually serves as an additional barrier or insulation, if you will, at night. So that's another small way to save money. Getting your furnace checked, in the wintertime before you fire that up, look at changing your filters on your air conditioner and on your heater so that, fresher air and it works less hard and, again, it saves energy. So things like that.
Energy audits?
We have energy audits. They're free. Okay, this is something where a trained professional will come into your home or business. They will look at how you're using energy. They may suggest that you change out some of your lights to LEDs, but they'll come in and give you a whole energy audit. You end up with a report after a few, I'm not sure if it's a few days or a week or so. They give you a report and say, here's all the areas that we suggest where you can save money on your energy bill. The utility pays for that, and where we see the benefits when people then implement some of the things that are being talked about. And if they could do that, again, it saves the customer's money, which in turn saves the utility's money.
Because you don't have to ramp up a facility. You don't have to increase capacity.
In the short term, we buy less energy. In the long term, we can delay the use or the need for that next power plant. And when we have to build that next power plant, that's when, you're talking millions of dollars and you'll see that incremental bump on your electric bill. So with the addition of solar, with the addition of what we call our demand-side management programs, which all of these fall under, we're seeing that our peak load is remaining flat. We haven't hit a new peak since 2012, which means instead of building new generation in 2020, maybe it's 2024 now.
Okay.
And the farther we push it out, the better.
Right. Ames continues to grow, but our energy demand is stable.
It is. It's actually, the peak has gone down. We're using a little more energy, but we're not hitting that peak in the summer like we used to.
Some other things that we have going on in the city of Ames. We have a deadline coming up to nominate an Ames resident for the Humanitarian Award. So the Ames Human Relations Commission is seeking nominations for this annual award. This award recognizes a worthy individual whose contributions to our community demonstrate extraordinary quality and efforts to promote diversity, fairness, and equality. To be eligible to receive the award, you must be an Ames resident. And you can get more information on the Humanitarian Award at our website at cityofames.org. The applications are due by noon on Friday, December 16th. We don't have much time left on that one.
That's true. And that is the award that's given at the...
At the Martin Luther King Community Celebration.
Okay.
This year it's January 16th. It's usually at the Ames Middle School. Big event on Monday, January 16th, 2017.
Okay.
So another event coming up... The band The Nadas has a big following locally. They are doing, first time ever, a performance at the Ames City Auditorium called Nada Silent Night. They have partnered with Toys for Tots. So when you purchase your tickets for this show, you're asked to bring a brand new unwrapped gift that Toys for Tots will distribute to local children. This band has been around since they formed in the 1990s. They were Iowa State students. This is a family-friendly concert, so get everybody together. It should be a nice holiday celebration. That concert is Saturday, December 17th, and you can get tickets online or at the Ames Community Center gym. We can sell tickets there. So, again, more information on our website, cityofames.org. Maybe a nice way to celebrate holidays with friends and family.
Well, thank you so much, Susan Guiazda, for coming in and for bringing Don Com with you so that we could hear a little bit from the horse's mouth about our electrical services and the good work that Ames and Ames residents are doing together.
You're welcome. You. Glad to be here.
Just a reminder to folks, we are still in the middle of our membership drive. We're seeking 50 new members. We've got 35 new members, so won't you pitch in and become one of those new members so that we can reach that goal? We're also trying to reach the $25,000 mark so that we can match a $25,000 matching grant from very loyal local supporters. So two ways that you can pitch in this membership drive campaign. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started out with Manny Redbear and Winona Gaston, two people from the Cheyenne River Tribe in South Dakota who are up in Ocheti Sakawing Camp near Cannonball, North Dakota. Jessica Fears, a young mother from Ames, also visited Standing Rock Camp last weekend and described that for us. She also was at the Des Moines River last night, and I believe she's going back there to give her last respects to the river. It's, the tunnel underneath it is almost complete. The pipe is being pulled through as we speak. Bruce Espy of Des Moines, a veteran, heard the call and will be arriving in snowy, frigid Standing Rock this weekend as part of a contingent of an estimated 2,000 veterans protecting the water protectors as the Army Corps of Engineers threatens to evict the Lakota and their allies from the camp there. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Thanks to Ron Carson for making that possible. Local Talk was engineered by Vince Valeriano. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from the CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Ripple by the Grateful Dead from their Reckoning album. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.